Hello and welcome to chatbiz.org. This is our third podcast, and with me today I had Linda Diffin, who you've met in previous podcasts, and Chris Sewell, who is chairman of Suffolk FSB.
That's the Federation of Small Businesses, of course. And we're going to be talking, I think fair to say we're going to be talking about officialdom today, aren't we?
We are, and how in small businesses either be the making or the breaking. So Chris, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? And how did you become chairperson of the Federation of Small Business for Suffolk?
I've done political consultancy work for a while, although I started off as a designer. I came from a fairly political family where politics was always around the table. So I had politics when I was a student, and it was politics around the table as my children were growing up. So while I was designing, I was also doing a certain amount of work for various parties. And when we came to Suffolk, I came here because my wife wanted a headship. And I thought, oh, well, I'll do what I always wanted to do when in my 20s and go back to running an art gallery. That'll be fun. But when I arrived here from Nottinghamshire, which supposedly had policing problems, and I came to super safe Suffolk, I was absolutely astounded that, in fact, the level of policing and the way policing went on in Suffolk wasn't as good as it should have been, and that rural communities actually just soaked up rural crime. And I just joined the FSB, went along to a few meetings, and somebody said, well, you seem to know a lot about how to deal with the police. Chris, will you deal with it? And I just started it off at branch level.
Right.
And became involved and started to develop a new strategy for getting business crime dealt with by the police.
It is a big issue here, isn't it? What sort of problems do people have?
Well, it's not as bad as it used to be. Because actually, what we put in place 6 years ago has paid huge dividends. What we had before was, in fact, there was no official way of recording business crime.
And when you say business crime, what do you mean by that?
Well, anything that affected the business community, that's a Home Office term, business crime, but what we say is crime against businesses.
And so you're talking about what, thefts from premises?
There can be, well, it's as wide as it can be. In the rural terms, of course, there's a farming dimension because farmers are very, very exposed. It can be about theft of fuel oil, it can be metal theft.
We've been hit quite a few times.
What's happened to you then?
Breaking in through the main gates, loss of stock. The big thing that they go for is trailers. If they can get a trailer, they then can go somewhere else and steal further equipment. They've got the trailer to take it. Over the last couple of years, the metal theft has gone up dramatically. The fuel theft has gone up dramatically, but not just businesses, domestic as well.
I suppose that's because both metal prices and fuel prices have gone up, so it's worth their while.
Yes, and BT have had problems with cable being stolen.
That's a major issue.
Because there's a lot of, and they brought in a new initiative which they've been running in Suffolk, where they put sensors in so that they can respond very, very quickly from areas. Gislingham, for example, had huge problems. I think three times they took the cable from that area.
And the effect of a small business is no telephone for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whilst it's
and
sorted.
No internet. I mean, just a few weeks ago, our local road was dug up and they stole loads of cables, telephone cables, and people in half of our village had no phone and no internet access, which if you're a small business, especially if you're working from home, has tremendous implications.
If you look at the crimes that are affecting the business community, there's an increase in fraud, online fraud, card fraud. There's issues about scams and phishing processes that are going on to find out information about your businesses. We meet with the police at senior police level. That's one of the things that Suffolk has achieved that most other counties and police authorities haven't achieved, is that we meet at assistant chief constable level three times a year with a big forum once a year. And at that forum, all businesses can come. The difference that it's made is that the police no longer have anywhere to hide. That in areas where you don't have this level, you know, district commanders know that in fact if they don't deal with business crime, it probably won't get to the top. In Suffolk, it does get to the top. Consequently, policing has improved no end.
And how did that come about, the forums?
I realised that the position of the Home Office was that they were not going to introduce any... They're things called key performance indicators. They're the way that the police are judged by central government and audited. And business crime was never going to be put onto that. So we had to find a way of getting it into the policing plan so that the business community, when the HMIC from Manchester Inspector of Constabulary came in to do their audit, they would see a reference to business crime. And that way, of course, therefore the police had to pay attention to it. So we put a proposal forward to the police authority and the chief constable at the time, who was Alistair McWhirter, saying that we would like to propose a way of bringing all the business community from the NFU, CLA, Chambers, Institute of Directors and the FSB all together four times a year and talk about the business issues, identify what they are and try and find solutions. And that's been the key. The last forum, we had a fair where, in fact, there were people there selling and showing how you use smart water.
Yeah, I was there. It was very good.
It was really good. And then how to put tracker onto your tractors and combine harvesters so that you could find them if they were stolen. That became a feature. And, of course, we know that once a year the chair of the police authority and the chief constable has to answer to the community. So there's a question and answer process. So it became a very hands-on. In fact, there was a video done, which is you can see on our website, on the FSB website, if you go to the Suffolk part of it, of the East Anglian region, of the police forum, I think, 2 years ago. And one of the people who attended said it's very brave of the chief constable to do
this. Yeah, he just stands there and takes all the questions,
never ducks anything. Mm-hmm. And it's made a very responsive and successful process.
It sounds like something that could be rolled out around the country.
It is, but it's quite interesting. Norfolk, because Norfolk and Suffolk are working a lot closer together now, Norfolk sent along somebody to view the planning stages for the last one, and he was there at every single planning stage. At the end of it, we said, well, are you going to do the same thing in Norfolk? He said, no, we'll never get the chief constable to agree to this.
To be called to account, do you think?
Yes. You have to be a brave chief constable and be very sure of your management systems and what you're putting in place to know that once a year you're going to have open house where the NFU are going to get their farmers there, the CLA are, we're going to get our small businesses there, and somebody's going to stand on the stage and have to take all the questions. But as you know, you attended the last one, it's not a slanging match.
It's very positive.
The first one, though...
was.
The first one, the Chambers turned up with somebody who'd been on an industrial estate, and he'd been robbed 6 times...
Good grief.
And nothing had been done about it. And in the end, in frustration, he moved his business to another industrial estate to be near to a police station. And when the gang turned up to rob him the 7th time, they were so furious they smashed up the rest of the industrial estate.
Good God.
Well, you should have seen the look on the chief constable's face when he told the story. Well, I would not have liked to have been in the shoes of that district commander the next day. But the point is that after that, the whole process turned.
So they saw benefit of having this?
Colossal. Because...
It's a two-way street then?
Oh, yes, because we put crime prevention methods onto the website, so do the NFU, so do the CLA, so do the IOD. There's a continual dialogue about one of the best things that we have in Suffolk is Police Direct.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a farming section to it.
Can you explain what that is?
Well, Police Direct is an online system that you can either have sent to your computer or to your mobile phone, and it's district areas, so you can sign up for different aspects of it. So, for example, there's a farm section called Farm Watch.
Mm-hmm.
There is a section for people who deal with bicycle sections. There's people for older and vulnerable people. There's a domestic section. There's an industrial estate section. And you sign up to a section, and if there's a sudden outbreak of crime in your locality, you get an immediate email or a text to your phone alerting you to a particular fraud or metal theft.
Yeah, we had one yesterday which said that a van with the registration number, or part of the registration number, had been seen, claiming was electricity board personnel, then asking for scrap, and then he went into another industrial estate yesterday and just asked for directions, then asked for scrap. Well, that put everybody on alert. And, you know, it means that if a van comes onto your premises and you've had the email or you've had the text message warning you, you're very proactive, you know, and people will soon get to the stage where they will see that there's no point in going in that particular area because the people are proactive. They come out, they take registrations.
And there's been a lot of work done on the nighttime economy in Ipswich. The chief constable has put extra policing in to actually make it a safer place for people to go and have a meal and to walk about, and to make it a safer place for young women to go and be able to go for a meal, go for a drink. It's quite impressive, and in doing so, they've actually reduced the amount of shoplifting that has taken place in Ipswich. So it's a very responsive process that's taken place in Suffolk. And it's, I believe it's taken place because all the business organisations basically got together and said, this is a problem, we'll help you sort it. And we're now beginning to roll this same approach out. Now, we meet with the MPs three times a year and we take key subject areas and put a presentation forward and ask them to go and do things in Parliament.
What sort of things?
Well, we started off with broadband because we had such a big problem, and it's worked because we got into the first phase of the framework. So Suffolk and Norfolk have both got through way ahead of the rest of the country.
The first phase of?
Putting superfast broadband out into the whole of the county. The next thing we're going to tackle is the problems with water and electricity, which is an acute problem in Suffolk. It's a big problem for the farming community. We need changes in the planning rules so that they can start to put mini reservoirs easily onto their own farms. At the moment, they can't do that easily. So we need to be able to approach that. That needs change of legislation in Parliament. But I think we also need to realise that at the moment, the investment programmes by the water companies and the electricity companies are dependent upon planning. Change in legislation needs to be that it's development on need. At that stage, then they can start to look at how they're going to plan ahead and make their borrowings to be able to deliver better water supply and better electricity to enable growth. Because
you say need as opposed to what? And what's the current situation? The
current situation is that planning takes place. Once planning takes place, then they start to plan the economic model. So, for example, in Sudbury, there's a big housing development that has been put forward. Planning has been given for it. But it's going to cost between 9 and 40 million to put the electricity in, and they're going to have to wait 4 years to do it. So the planning was done first, and then they go and find the money. Whereas, in fact, you should be able to see, well, obviously, this is a county that's growing. We should plan for it according to need.
And what sort of changes would that involve in terms of planning laws, without going into sort of, you know, clauses and sub-clauses?
It will require legislative change.
At Westminster level?
Yes, because at the moment what's happening is that the Environment Agency can stop a process because they can say, well, there isn't enough water, or there isn't the electricity. You can't do this particular development. Well, it's not just about housing. Suffolk is superbly placed in closeness to Martlesham and the Science Park in Cambridgeshire on technology. We are well placed for good links to London. We are well placed for companies, small and medium-sized companies who want a foothold in Europe, who might come from China or India, to come to be close to the intellectual centres for research and development. But they can't come here because there isn't the electricity and the water
for them to...
No infrastructure.
Yeah.
So we need to sort the infrastructure out. And my...
It's very much a chicken and egg, Chris.
It is. But I think that with... Now we've got superfast broadband coming. It should be finished by 2015. We have to work together with the councils and with Parliament through our MPs to put things in place so that when the superfast broadband is in, we will also have improved roads, improved rail links, improved electricity supply, better water management, because it is going to come down to water management rather than finding new water. It's going to be better ways of using it, better ways of preserving it, better ways of using grey water.
Yeah.
It'll be those kind of things and putting those things in place so that at that stage we can launch growth in Suffolk. Because we've got to remember, as far as the UK's economy is concerned, there's only three geographical areas that are net contributors to the Exchequer, and this is one of those areas. Now, if we can't sustain our position, let alone growth, we've got a problem for our national economy. We can put money and should put money into the north and the more deprived areas of the country to help growth. But this is the area that generates
capital. The money to do that, yeah.
To do that. And we have to find a good way of supporting it. And our job, I think, as the FSB, is to work with the chambers and the farming community and the Institute of Directors and work together to put solutions forward. Give them to the MPs and ask them to go away and do something.
Sorry to interrupt. I know you said that you worked well with all those other groups when you were dealing with the issue with the police, but how effective is the cooperation and the relationship between all the different groups? How effective and how useful is it?
It works when you actually choose big subjects, because the farming community will lobby and do lobby incredibly well on issues to do with their community. But there are subjects like water that affect all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So at those kind of stages, you can say, well, we'll join together to try and solve that particular problem. Procurement and planning tends to affect members of the IOD and the chambers as much as it does as the FSB. You can choose the subjects.
But how do you actually get together with them? I mean, do you just ring up the chairman and go, hello, it's Chris here from Suffolk FSB?
Yes,
you know,
that's what it comes to.
Shall we have a little chat about this?
Yes, I know John Dugmore, who's the CEO for the chambers. I know Paul Winter, who's the chair for the IOD. You develop those relationships.
Mm.
And the organisations work in different ways. I mean, the FSB is very much a member-led group. Our strength is that we have incredible intellectual strength amongst our members, and we use that to develop real policy, and it makes us very, very strong, because when a member says something to an MP but has real knowledge, and we tend to put those, we find somebody, say, who do we know who's got that real level of it? Oh, so and so has. Simon's got it, or Paul's got it, or John's got it. Talk to them, make sure that it aligns with FSB policy, and then put them in the front line. And it's a very powerful tool. But organisations like the Chambers, they will have board members who they'll send to work on projects. But they work very much more through officers, so the NFU does as well. Mm-hmm. They've got a very good lobby team based in Newmarket, a very slick operation in Newmarket. that are very, very good at identifying issues on farming.
You're talking about the big themes and how things work and how the corporation works on big themes and how you can help your members on those big themes. But what if somebody's got a small problem? I mean, a huge problem to them probably, but not a big national problem, a problem that's specific to them, and they want to get in touch with their councillors or their MPs and they're not having much joy. How can you help on that?
If you're an organisation and you're known by not just by the CEOs of the councils but also by the leaders of the councils and the portfolio holders.
Portfolio holders, you mean the individual?
Yeah, so
planning committee chairman or the
yes like you've got Judy
chairman.
Terry, who is the portfolio holder for economic development of the county council. When you know those people to go and talk to, and people like John Griffiths, who's the leader of St Edmundsbury Council, you can take a problem of a member to them and say, John, I actually think this is a bit unreasonable. I think you could actually help solve this problem. This is the problem. I think this is the answer. But what do you think? It's having those relationships. If you have a good presence and people know, the councils know that, in fact, your message is intellectually sound and strong, then they tend to listen to you. So we've had people who've come along with planning problems where planning departments are acting irresponsibly.
I heard Karen snort then.
Yes.
Not that I'm suggesting the planning department acted irresponsibly in your case, but I know you had a long drawn-out battle.
I can honestly say that if it hadn't been for the FSB, we'd have had our planning.
Mm.
And that was because they knew the people to go and talk to, put the case forward, explained the circumstances of the case, and the case got moved on. The case was sitting on somebody's desk and we couldn't get an answer. We sent letters, recorded delivery, we went to our MP. We have a letter from our MP which says, I'm terribly sorry, but they won't even answer my letters. You know, we went one meeting. At the end of the meeting, Chris said, has anybody got any issues that they would like to raise? We raised it, and within a couple of weeks, we were moved onto somebody's desk who did something. Now, to me, that is the power of the FSB. You've got very, very strong links with your local council, your district councils, county councils, the police, etc. And that is where having somebody who's as strong as Chris, as the chairperson, who can say, you need to speak to XYZ.
So that network
that
of contacts
it really does.
Invaluable.
Yeah, it's
and the relationships presumably that you've built over the years. With
the FSB started as a lobby organisation years ago over an element of tax. In fact, I can't even remember what tax issue it was, but that's where it started. They thought, well, we'll get together because we can't fight this by ourselves. And in essence, that's what the FSB, the Federation of Small Businesses, is about. It's that you try to give member services that benefit their businesses. That inevitably grows as an organisation gets bigger. But the other side is that you can face issues at Westminster, you can face issues with your county council, with your district council, that by yourself you couldn't, but as part of a group.
Mm.
When you can say that there are 3,000 members in the FSB in Suffolk, that's a big group of people to get together that you could say you represent. 6,000, I think it's around about 6,000 members in East Anglia, which is Norfolk and Suffolk combined. So it makes a very powerful lobby base. It makes us the biggest actual business organisation in the county. I'm absolutely convinced, though, to get real movement and real change, you can't do it by yourself. You have to do it with other organisations on the big issues.
Mm.
Just the big issues.
I wonder if we can just briefly go back to the policing issue, because I see Karen's got a piece of paper in front of her about the police and crime commissioners that we're being asked to vote for next month. I mean, we mentioned this in our last blog, I think, in passing, but perhaps we could talk about that in a bit more detail. Chris, I mean, what use is a police and crime commissioner? I mean, how do they help people like us? How can they?
It came from work that the Labour Party did with people like Ken Livingstone. And having worked on policing in Suffolk, I actually saw the benefits of that. Ken Livingstone in the end squared up to the commissioner and said, look, if I put 2 pence on the rate and ring fence it, will you go back and get those estates for me that have been abandoned by policing and have been taken over by drug dealers? And one very powerful figure, because let's face it, chief constables are really powerful. You know, they know how to manage situations. Going up against a chief constable is something. So going up against policing in London, you had to be a strong person to do it. They came to an agreement and they went and did it. The change in policing occurred when the deputy commissioner stood up and said, we've got 18 years of policing wrong. And firefighting, which was basically police going out in squad cars, going into an area and then sorting things out and then coming out again, that old system stopped, virtually stopped overnight. And you got a situation where community policing started to take place, where police officers, there was a certain amount of resistance. I think there were, in Suffolk, there were a lot of young police officers who were high on testosterone and, you know, adrenaline and charging around in police cars.
Not just in Suffolk, I think.
You know, who were basically now having to think about people as communities and how they were going to protect communities.
So this is about community policing?
Potentially it is, because what I think the Conservative government realised, that it was a very powerful tool. If you got one very powerful person against another very powerful person saying, these are the needs of my community who have elected me, what are you going to do it? There are risks, though, involved with it, because you could, in theory, get an area which you suddenly ended somebody from the extreme right.
It's supposed to be non-political, isn't it?
But
But in this area, I think
we have one Conservative, one Labour and one Independent that have come forward so far.
And I think there's going to need to be an awful lot of explaining to be done on how to, if even the voting process. I was talking to the deputy chair of the police authority today, and she was saying, what about the voting system? And I said, what about the voting system? Because all I'm interested in is getting more people out there voting. And she said, well, you realise it's when you vote for three people, the system.
Not proportional.
Proportional.
Yeah. Oh.
Proportional representation. Yeah, minds all went blank collectively.
All went
blank.
But basically, you have your first choice, your second choice, and third choice. You can just put one person. But can you imagine a situation where you're going into a voting booth, if it isn't clearly explained that, in fact, you don't invalidate the vote by just voting for one person, but you can make your first choice, second choice, third choice. Getting people to vote in a different way...
Yes, they're used to one vote.
Is going to be... And I think there hasn't been enough work done by the government explaining what it's about. Because if you ask people, and we're at risk of the whole process being not a valid process, because if we don't get at least 40 to 45% people going out and voting, then what does the vote mean if you've been elected by 5 to 15% of the population, which is what they're talking about the target being at the moment?
Well, quite interesting. When I've been talking to people about, you know, the police crime commissioner, it has only been on media, news, television, radio, papers in the last couple of weeks. Now, we are on sort of the 10th, 11th of October here. The election is on the 15th of November, and they're going to elect 41 of these commissioners across England and Wales. And people said, do we have to vote? You know, people don't realise. And I said, yes, this is like voting for your local councillor, your local MP. It is the responsibility of you to go out and vote. I didn't know I had to.
I don't think people really understand the role of the police and crime commissioners, what it is they're meant to be doing. They think it's something like the parish council, you know, parish council sort of thing. Actually, this is quite a powerful person who's going to get paid a lot of money to represent his or her community.
It's an incredibly powerful post. They're going to appoint their own deputy. So that's another issue. Where are they going to make a political appointment? Are they going to go for an independent to be their deputy? How is the panel, you know, they've set up these police and crime panels that are mainly, I think, they're all political apart from two independents. So if you've got 10 people on it, it'll be 10 people who are political animals from the county and the district and borough council, and then you've only got two independents on it, whereas at the police authority at the moment, you've got a much healthier...
broad spectrum.
Yes, you have.
How does this tie in to the police authority? Where's the...
Police authority stops at the time that the police commissioners...
Right.
..go. At the moment, there's a process going forward which we're contributing to as a business community, not just the FSB, but the whole group, where we're meeting to actually put what we would like to see in the policing plan, which is going to be presented to the successful
candidate
as a draft. This is what the police authority have put together as a draft. We hand it to you. Now it's with you. And then they, in a very short period of time, have got to work out whether, in fact, that's what they want. And I think it's going to be quite difficult.
Mm. What experience do these people have of working with the police or, you know, sitting on any of the boards? I mean, as far as I can see, there can be anybody coming from any background. They don't have to have any experience of working in collaboration with the authorities.
Well, you could say that about the police authority, that you've got people who are district councillors, county councillors, and independents. I mean, Golsham, KB, who was the chair of the police authority a couple of years ago, was an Ofsted inspector, but she was a very good independent chair. She just learnt. I mean, she's bright. See, mm-hmm. She took on what she needed to do. As all the police authority members did, they were very good at actually working quite hard, giving their Friday afternoons up to go along and to deal with the issues. Never operational. I mean, that's, I suppose, we'll be entering into new territory. I was always aware, as a political lobbyist, that I knew exactly what the old system was. You had the Home Office, it was called the tripartite system, the Home Office, the police authority, and the operational level, the chief constables. And there was a balance. The Home Office could not control the police, the chief constable, but the chief constable was accountable to the police authority. It was a very delicate balance that
worked.
That worked. Now we're changing it. And potentially, we're politicising that role in the community. My work, it might fall on its tush.
Mm. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Chris. Really good to talk to you, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from Chris again in future episodes. Thank you very much for that. And thanks for listening.
Thanks.